From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, a soul and funk revival, we hear from singer Sharon Jones, who has been described as a female James Brown. She grew up in his hometown and started imitating him as a child. Now she performs with the band The Dap Kings. We'll also be joined by the band's producer, bassist, and chief songwriter Gabriel Roth, a.k.a. Bosco Mann. He co-founded Daptone Records, which recently released the third album by Sharon Jones and The Dap Kings, 100 Days, 100 Nights. The Dap Kings also backed Amy Winehouse on her hit tracks Rehab and You Know I'm No Good. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Britney Spears' new album Blackout. It's her first studio release since her marital and child custody problems made her a tabloid fixture. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some people have called Sharon Jones the female James Brown. She grew up in his hometown, Augusta, Georgia, and imitated him as a child. Now she fronts the band The Dap Kings. Jones was described as a timeless soul singer in the New York Times. The Dap Kings were described as obsessive and skillful soul revivalists. You can also hear the band's retro soul sound on several tracks of Amy Winehouse's hit album Back to Black, including Rehab and You Know I'm No Good. The Dap Kings backed her on her first U.S. tour. My guests are Sharon Jones and the founder of the Dap Kings, Gabriel Roth, a.k.a. Bosco Mann. They met when he co-owned the now-defunct label Desco Records and asked her to record for it. Roth and Neil Sugarman subsequently co-founded Daptone Records, which recently released the third album by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Roth plays bass, produced the album, and wrote many of the songs on it, including the title track, 100 Days, 100 Nights. That's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings from the new album. It's the title track of 100 Days, 100 Nights. My guests are lead singer Sharon Jones and the bass player and band leader Gabriel Roth, a.k.a. Bosco Mann, and he wrote the song that we just heard. Welcome to both of you. How would you describe the sound you're going after?
More of a soul, stacked 68, 69 sound. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I've always just tried to make records that sound like the, you know, sound like the records I like. I never had too much of a very specific agenda that we were going to try to, you know, try to ape something or try to pass something off. We just wanted to make records that felt good to us and sounded good to us.
Gabe, would you describe the instrumentation of the band and what you patterned it on?
The instrumentation of the band is drums, bass, two guitar players, baritone and tenor saxophones, a trumpet, percussion. And Sharon singing, and then on the record there's you know some extra gravy. We have the Bushwick Philharmonic string section. We have you know pianos and organs and vibes and background singers and things like that. But as far as the touring act, it's the two guitars and the horns and the drums and the bass.
Is it hard to find good baritone players who aren't full-time jazz musicians now?
Well, I'll tell you, the thing about this band is that it really is a band, and I think it's rare for a band to be this big and actually be a band. It's a bunch of guys that are really part of it. We're not using sidemen. We're not changing people out every gig. You know, I mean, once in a while people have to sub out for something. But as far as baritone players, man, we have Ian Hendrickson-Smith, who is actually a very talented and accomplished jazz musician in his own right, both on tenor and alto and baritone. He's put out a lot of records in his own name. But he's a real barker in the band. I think for the horn player specifically, I mean, it's a good point you brought up. Horn players are used to coming from more of a kind of jazz mercenary background. That just tends to be the culture around horn players as opposed to guitar players and stuff. But these are guys that really, really can feel the power and the energy of playing in a section and being part of a whole. And I think it's that way for the whole band. You really have guys that are not coming into it with ego, but are coming into it with, you know, with the idea of everybody, you know, playing a part together and achieving something that nobody can achieve individually. And I think that's something that's really refreshing, especially coming out of certain circumstances sometimes in jazz where people are more sidemen or just coming in to play solos and things like that.
James Brown has obviously been a big influence on each of you. I'd like you to each talk about the influence of James Brown on you. Sharon, let's start with you.
Well, with me, just, I guess, being born in his hometown and my parents, I found out later, my mother knew him. They used to play together. My father knew
him. Your mother used to play with James Brown?
Yeah. Like in Augusta, it's something like they used to, some kind of way they crossed paths, is going somewhere, doing something, you know. Oh, yeah, you know.
Wait, do you mean play music with him or just like play as
no,
a kid
No, I mean,
with
like, they was young, you know, when he was out there doing his thing, like in front of the record store, before he owned anything, when he was still dancing and shining shoes and making money, that type of thing, you know, they knew each other from coming up. And my Uncle Willie told me that he was like, my father used to like tap with James Brown, used to dance out on the streets. I was like, wow, you know, so I don't, you know, you never know these things. You know, when the older people get up and they start talking sometime, and I just found all this out like last year. So I'm like, well, I haven't heard this before. So, you know, I'll let that go. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Uncle Willie just wanted to be talking, but, you know, but still, I know that they did grow up. And once he was performing somewhere in Augusta, and I think I was maybe 9, 10, or maybe, you know, younger, and I went to see him, and something happened. He was on the stage with, and I looked at his foot, and all I remember saying to my father, I turned around, told someone, like, he's floating. His foot, he's not even touching the floor. And I was, like, right at the stage, eye level to James Brown's foot and feet, and I couldn't tell if that man, it was like he was floating. And that's an experience that I just remember, that experience with James. And then the next was when I saw him last year, April, in Italy, right before, you know. And he was a little weak, and I got to take the picture, and I was trying to get word in to him. Oh, Mr. Brown, you know, my name is Sharon Jones with the Dap Kings, and you know. And he was like, looked me right in the eye and said, God bless you, daughter. And I was like, and that was it, and, you know.
So what influence has James Brown had on you as a singer and just as a stage performer?
Well, basically with Daptone, when I met them, it was like, it sounds so much like it reminded me of James Brown and JB's, that music. And then I knew where they was coming from with me singing. And I guess just doing the music, hearing the music, and always around these guys playing the JB's and the James Brown thing, and I fit right in. I guess I was that female James Brown, that the sound.
Well, while we're talking about James Brown, you know, James Brown was often introduced on stage in this, like, great hyperbolic way. And you I know, have done that on record. I don't know if you do that for all the shows. But why don't we play the introduction from the first Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings album. And this will give a taste of what I mean. Here it comes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Daptone Super Soul Review. My name is Binky Griptite, and we are the Dap Kings. Thank you very much. Right now, for your enjoyment and pleasure, we would like to introduce to you the funky and dynamic sister who is exciting dance floors across the nation with her dynamic new sound. Soul brothers and sisters from coast to coast get up and get down whenever her records are played. They're doing all the funky new dances. They're doing the bump and touch. They're doing the dap dip. Everything. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about 110 pounds of soul excitement coming for you. This sister is so bad, she's badder than bad. I'm talking about the same sister that brought you such hits as The Landlord. Damn, it's hot. Ain't it hot? Bam! And now, ladies and gentlemen, the star of our show, the super soul sister with the magnetic je ne sais quoi, Miss Sharon Jones!
That's the introduction from the first Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings album. God, can you guys do that for me, like when I host Fresh Air?
that would just be so great to have that kind of introduction. I'll tell you,
you got to hire
Binky Griptite, man. Binky Griptite has been a very integral part of our whole operation for the last, you know, dozen years. You know, and he's not just, I mean, he's a great guitar player, but just as far as showmanship, he's kind of the guy that, as an MC, kind of brings the show to another level as far as our live show, you know. And he's definitely inspired, not just by James Brown, but by Danny Ray, who always used to introduce James Brown.
Does this help you really get in the mood to be on stage, hearing that build
up?
Yeah,
oh, yes, it does. I mean, when I'm behind the stage and Binky out there doing one with the magnetic, I can't even say that, magnetic, je ne sais quoi, whatever.
Magnetic, je ne sais.
Yeah, and I'm this back there. And they're just screaming in his voice, Miss Sharon, Miss. You know, I get so hyped. You know, the blood start pumping. I feel like I'm getting ready to go on to a Rocky show, head for the ring, you know, get ready to get in the boxing ring.
You know, the live show we do is real different from the records, and we don't try to do the same thing in the studio as we do on stage and vice versa because it works differently. But as far as the live show, it is really influenced not just by James Brown but by Stax and all the other kind of soul reviews that were going on in the late 60s. There's a sense of showmanship in that and excitement that you don't see in a lot of shows nowadays. And, you know, we do it's not formulaic, but it's very similar. We usually start with some instrumentals and maybe Binky will sing a few songs and we kind of get the crowd going and he'll talk to the crowd and get them, you know, so kind of build up the suspense. And then he gets into this huge intro. And that was, I mean, the one that you just heard, that was from what, 5-6 years ago or something?
Yeah.
Right? So that was about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So now it's a lot more hooked up. You know, band is settled in and there's a lot of fireworks in the show, you know, and Sharon's coming out and the band's blasting and we're cutting from one song to another. And, you know, so in that way, it's exciting.
My guests are singer Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth, the leader of the band The Dap Kings. Sharon Jones and The Dap Kings have a new CD called 100 Days, 100 Nights. They'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are singer Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth of the band The Dap Kings. Well, let's hear another song. Another song from the new Sharon Jones and The Dap Kings album, 100 Days, 100 Nights. And this is called When the Other Foot Drops, Uncle. And Gabe, you wrote this. Do you want to say a few words about the song?
Yeah, it's actually funny because I didn't think it was that obscure. But people have thought this song was about some guy that's not treating Sharon right, but it's actually a little political. Uncle, When the Other Foot Drops, Uncle, it's about Uncle Sam. It's just kind of, it's just a song about all the lies and corruption kind of eventually catching up, and you know the other shoe dropping, and you know, obviously when you say Uncle Sam, you're talking about, you know, Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and all these things, and these guys finally gonna get caught up in all these lies about everything, about weapons of mass destruction and oil money and the rest. I mean, but that's what the song's about. And I think if you listen to it in that light, you hear the lyrics a little differently.
Sharon, did you know that was what it was about when you were singing it?
Not really. So that's why I'm just going to say, get out of here. My mouth is open. I'm looking at him like, huh?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, people, they've asked me about that song. I say, well, you know, it's just about somebody's being slick and they're going to get caught up in what they're doing, you know. Like, you know, their lies and whatever they're doing is being caught up. So now it's good. So when I get interviewed, people ask me, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, there's a line in that song about your crafty little pencil. Running out of lead, and everybody thinks that's some kind of impotency thing.
So Sharon, what do you mean about the little crafty little pencil? I'm like, you know, that's really, Gabe wrote the song. Yeah,
anyway.
Well, I have to say, that's what I thought it meant, and the crafty little pencil thing. And I thought, I was going to ask you, Gabe, like, uncle? I mean, like, this isn't a relationship with her uncle, is it? So I was a little confused.
Yeah, that's actually why we stuck that uncle on the end of the title.
Yeah.
It kind of hung that on there at the end. It was like, well, here you go.
I thought this was some kind of like expression that only I didn't get.
I tell you, it makes a lot more sense than Goo Goo Ga Choo, I guess. So.
I'll give you that. Well, it's a great song no matter how you want to interpret it. So here it is, When the Other Foot Drops, Uncle. It's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Oh, the way you lie to get your taste, uncle. Oh, the things you let to waste. But every dog has his day, uncle. And it just can't go on. It just can't go on this way.
you're gonna pay for all your dimes. There won't be nowhere to run. You're gonna be found out. Yeah. You can bet you're gonna lose your cloud. You've been tramping around this world like you're the only one living. But soon enough, you're gonna get back some of what you've been giving. The lies that you've been spinning up are running out of thread. And your crafty little pencil is running out of lead.
That's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings from their new CD, 100 Days, 100 Nights. And my guests are the lead singer, Sharon Jones, and Gabriel Roth, who is the band leader, a co-founder of the group, the lead songwriter and bass player. Sharon, I've got a few questions for you, and then Gabe, I've got a few questions for you. And Gabe, feel free to jump in if there's something you want to add to what Sharon says okay. here. First of all, actually, I got a question for both of you, which is, how did you find each other?
Well, Gabe was looking. He was looking for three background singers to do some vocals for Lee Fields. And my ex used to play the saxophone with the Doc Tyrese, with the guys when they was, mm-hmm. you know, Soul Providers. And he was like, well, my lady sing. And they were like, a lady sing? And I said, yeah, I can do all three parts. So when I went in, Gabe heard me. Everything worked. Everyone was happy.
Mm-hmm. And then we ended up cutting two more songs that day with you singing lead.
Yeah, that's right. Switchblade and...
And The Landlord, I believe.
The Landlord, I believe, yeah.
There's a great story I'd like you to tell, Gabe, about recording Sharon doing a track that was intended for a man. The track is called Switchblade. Tell us the story.
Well, originally Sharon, just like she said, she'd come into the studio just to sing backgrounds. And there were two tracks on this album that we wanted backgrounds for. One was the one for Lee Fields, which she nailed in a second, did all three parts, blew me away. All of a sudden, it was the first thing I ever did that sounded like a record to me. And then there was this other song called Switchblade, and there was this guy, this kind of comedian friend we had that wanted to do this whole long kind of, you know, this whole long talking rap. Well, when I say rap, I mean, you know, he's just talking about, oh, I just got out of prison, I'm going to cut you with my switchblade. And then Sharon would come in with,
Switchblade.
Yeah, so she cut all those background vocals, you know, and she was having a gas. Anyway, while I was cutting the last track of backing vocals, she just started talking smack, and we were rolling on the floor. It was much funnier than the guy who was going to do it. So I just wound the tape real quick and just told her to go for it, and I ran the tape at a little bit higher speed so she could, because she was trying to do kind of a low voice anyway. So I just ran the tape a little bit fast for her, and she just went through the whole thing, I'm going to slit you where the good Lord split you, and all the whole thing. And she went off for about 3-4 minutes straight.
Just talking.
And just in one take, and that was, man, we had a gas. That was actually, it was strange, because that was really the first lead vocal that we cut together, and it wasn't really a vocal. She was just talking smack. But you know, it was something. It was kind of my first glimpse into the kind of personality and the kind of wit that and the charisma that she had that you know enabled her to kind of create an entire show sometimes out of you know, people just staring at her and she's just talking nonsense sometimes and people are having a blast, you know. But and then after that, we, you know, she sang The Landlord, which is a song I'd written angrily. I was going through an eviction, some typical New York stuff at the time. So she sang a song about my landlord. And, you know, after that, we did a bunch of 45s and eventually an album and another album. And here we are.
Well, Switchblade is really hard to find. It's out of print. But fortunately, you have a copy for us to hear. So why don't we listen to it?
I done told you to get away from me. Don't make me cut you with this switchblade. I'll cut you up. I'll cut you up bad. I'll cut you so bad your mama won't know you. Just step away now. I'll slit you where the good Lord split you double, twice, and three times more. Just get on away from here now. Don't make me slice you. Don't make me slice you. Cause I'm fast. And I'm bad. Now you talking about groovy? Groovy? The only thing gonna be grooving is blood gonna be flying when I finish slicing you up now. Move on away now. Step on back. Yeah, now. Move on away in. That's why they call me. Switchblade.
So that's Switchblade with my guest Sharon Jones, recorded so she could be slowed down and sound like a man. And my guests are Sharon Jones, who's the lead singer of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and Gabriel Roth, who's the founder of the band, the lead songwriter and the bass player. So Sharon, I know you spent some time as a prison guard at Rikers Island. Did you record this rap before or after you held that job?
After.
So you had inspiration for this?
Oh yeah, I was ready. I think maybe that's why when I went in, it was so sharp. Everything just came real fast, you know. And actually, I remember when I went in the studio, they asked the question, pretend, you know, some guy, you know, like, you know, a bad guy would cut you so fast with a razor, you know, back in the day, just talking smack, like in an alley or something. So that's when I went to that a junkyard dog. I tuck his tail under the run when he see me coming. And it was all just like spurred. I mean, just the words just flew out. It was like I didn't even think of what I was saying, concentrating on, I just went with it.
Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth will be back in the second half of the show. Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings' latest CD is called 100 Days, 100 Nights. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from CNN. Presenting the CNN YouTube Republican debate tonight, Anderson Cooper hosts this event tonight at 8 Eastern on CNN. From Abrams Image, publisher of Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes by Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein. And from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment, presenting The Namesake, a vibrant coming-of-age story starring Cal Penn, now on DVD. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Something's changed in your eyes.
Coming up, more with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. And rock critic Ken Tucker reviews the new Britney Spears album, Blackout, her first studio album since 2003.
I can tell that you and me ain't right no more. You pull your lips into a smile, and you know that for the while you ain't that glad I'm here. Now can't you see I'm getting wise to what you're hiding in your eyes? Our situation is clear to me. Something's changed in your eyes. I could see it when I walked through that door. Something's changed in your eyes. I can tell that you and me ain't right no more. The way they would regard me, those two eyes of yours could hardly do me no kind of wrong. Well, like the kings, your eyes would rain. Rule my heart, I feel no pain. Now all of that.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with singer Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth of the band The Dap Kings. Their sound is inspired by soul music of the 60s, but many of their songs are originals. Their latest album is called 100 Days, 100 Nights. Roth produced it, wrote many of the songs, and plays bass. Before Jones was able to make a living as a singer, one of her jobs was serving as a prison guard at Rikers Island in New York. She told me how she got the job.
I took the test. I took a lot of tests at that time. I took the police test.
What's the test like? I mean, what you really need to do is to be able to, you know,
get
people to respect you. How do you pass a test on that?
Well, they give you a psychological test, you know, the physical test you have to go through, a little background check on you, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I think I would have still been there, but it just took me away from my singing, you know, the music. It was, you know. It was like a career. And after being in there, it was like an omen. My first week, they stuck me outside, and I pulled a groin muscle on the side. I fell. Then I came back, and I was in a, believe it or not, it's so weird, a car accident. A truck hit me, and I was out for another, like, 9 months. And they forced me back to work. And at the same day I came to work, I had a back brace, a neck brace, you know, and I'm walking on and fell on the curb. So now I'm injured again.
No.
But now it's, I'm telling you, it wasn't meant for me. I fell on the job. Now it's comp, and I'm out again for another couple of months. And so when I finally came in, they said, you know, the lawyer said, why don't you just resign? This way they won't fire you. And so I resigned for medical reasons.
So how many days did you actually work?
Okay, I was out of the 2 years, from 88 to 90, maybe 6-8 months.
So when you were there, given how you kept injuring yourself and you weren't in the best physical shape, how were you able to convince the prisoners that you were strong enough and focused enough to do the job and keep them in line?
I may tell you, if the look in my eyes, you may have like 80 inmates to maybe three officers or two officers. So it was really weird, but you could not show fear. And that's one thing I didn't show, you know, and I got the respect from them right there, and they knew that I didn't take stuff. I wasn't scared.
Let's hear another track from Sharon Jones and the Daft Kings. And this song is called Humble Me. And this is another song, Gabe, that you wrote. Do you want to say anything about writing or recording this track?
Well, it's a very simple song. There wasn't much to write. It's just a couple of chords and some simple, heartfelt words that Sharon could really get into. I mean, the thing that I learned about writing is that, you know, I've never been a genius or anything, but I learned how to kind of get out of the way of great musicians and great singers. So, you know, if you listen to the song, there's not much to the writing in it, but I think Sharon puts a lot of heart into it, you know.
Actually, I think that song, you was writing something about me, the inside of me, but I think, you know, by knowing me all these years, Gabe knew that how I am at the church, I'm always saying, you know, I'm so thankful for what God gave me. So that's why I'm always saying, if you see me like I'm higher than everybody else, you know, bring me down. Let me know I'm not. If you see me up here wanting all these here fancy things, which, you know, they don't never see me out here flashing and wanting stuff. But if you see me doing that, I want all these shoes that cost $2,000, $3,000. Think about that man over there who don't even have the foot is cut off, you know, don't even have legs, you know. And then I'm also thankful, humble for when I'm on the road. People come out and pay to come and see me. And I get on that stage, and I'm humble for them coming out to see me every night. And I'm so thankful for them, for God, for having me to be able to dance and jump and sing and keep my voice open. So that song is just about me thanking God, being humble for my blessings.
All right. Well, here it is. Sharon Jones and the Daft Kings, Humble Me, from their new CD, 100 Days, 100 Nights. That's Sharon Jones and the Daft Kings, and with me in the studio is Sharon Jones and Gabe Roth, who's co-founder of the Daft Kings, leader of the band, writer of most of the songs, including the one we just heard, and bass player. Gabe, now, you write songs under the name Bosco Man, and you perform under the name Bosco Man. Where does that name come from, and why did you feel like you needed to have a stage name?
Well, it's very different now than when we started making records. We first started making records, it was a very different kind of business for us. We were, you know, I was about 19, 20 years old, and we were really into these old records. And we would make kind of these fake old records, you know, reissues of a sound. The first record album we did was a reissue of a soundtrack to a kung fu movie that never existed. You know, we just kind of made this stuff up. And so we were just having a blast making things up and putting them out. And people were buying them. And then we said, oh, great, man, people really like this music. So we started using, you know, we'd do a real name and say, okay, this is a new record we just recorded. And nobody was interested. We couldn't give them away. So we got kind of more into those fake things. And we did a lot, man. We all used a lot of fake names, man. We did, you know, fake sitar records and African records, all different kinds of stuff with all kinds of crazy names. But really, and that once I got deeper into it, I had another problem, which was that the first record label that we had going, Desco Records, was funded a lot by credit cards and, you know, other people that I'd borrowed money from. So once we did start selling records, I was real worried about putting my real name on any of them because I had so many collections. I mean, I was sleeping on somebody's floor and I had was paying so much money to credit card companies every month and so many people coming down on me trying to take money. I just didn't want to put my real name on anything. But, you know, in the long run, it actually worked out well because, you know, when I'm on the road and somebody comes up to me and they say, hey, Bosco, it's good to see you again. I know right away this is not somebody I'm real close to. So I can say, hey, it's good to see you too. And I don't have to try to remember who they are. But,
so how'd you come up with the name?
Well, the Bosco part of it, actually, my dad wanted to name me Hieronymus after Hieronymus Bosch and was going to call me Bosco for short. And my mom wouldn't let him do it, so eventually he named his dog Bosco. But so that was for him. And the man part of it was one of the first two records we did. There was a guitar player named Scott Mann that played on the record, and you know he used his real name Scott Mann. I just thought it'd be cool to have some brothers in the rhythm section, so I said, yeah, I'll be his brother. I'll be Bosco Mann. But yeah, I didn't really think that much of it. You know, it's always the things that you don't really think out too much that end up. You end up explaining
you.
For years.
Right.
But, were there other names you used, like on the fake sitar record?
Bill Ravi Harris, I think, did the sitar record. There was a couple others, you know, Mr. Icy, different things. And a lot of guys, you know, used different names for different things. But it was, you know, at the time, it was real goofy. It wasn't, you know, we weren't really like we didn't really see ourselves as a legitimate part of the recording industry. We were making these 45s and vinyl LPs, and we were selling them to people that are avid collectors of old records, you know. So it was a very strange scene to start with. It wasn't the same thing as trying to do a record these days, you know.
My guests are singer Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth, co-founder of the band The Dap Kings. Sharon Jones and The Dap Kings have a new CD called 100 Days, 100 Nights. They'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are singer Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth, co-founder of the band The Dap Kings. One of the things that The Dap Kings are known for is that in your studio, you don't use digital recording technology. You use reel-to-reel tapes. You used to record on vinyl. But anyways, you shy away from, like, the new digital technology. Why? Like, what do you hear? What kind of sound can you get on analog that you feel you can't get on digital?
I mean, there's a lot of differences, but the main difference, I mean, the thing is I've had a lot of technical, very often engineers or producers or something will try to, you know, will engage me in these very technical conversations about what gear you're using, what kind of mics or what kind of tape machines. But really, you know, my answer every time, which is you know, is not trying to be modest or anything, but just being truthful, is that really 99% of what's in a record is what's coming out of the musicians. And I think that the arrangements and the sound that the musicians have on their instruments, that, you know, Dave Guy on the trumpet and Tommy playing guitar and Homer Steinweiss playing drums, these guys, they all of them, the whole band, everybody's got a sound on their instrument. And they actually sound like that. And a lot of people think I'm doing some crazy studio tricks, but really most of it is them. As far as that last 1%, I think that there's a lot of disadvantages to modern approaches to recording. One of them is that they tend to approach everything digitally with as many tracks as possible. With everything's recorded to a computer, so you can hit undo. If somebody's recording a solo, you can have them record it 35 times and then take the best notes from them. And if they say, "Oh, well, you think that was good?" Well, I don't know. Maybe try it again, and we'll see. When you're recording to like an 8-track tape machine, you're recording mostly live, and things are being mixed together. And if somebody goes back and they say, "Man, I don't know about that solo I played," you know, I look them in the eye and say, "Hey, are you going to play it better than that?" And they either have to say yes or no. And you need great musicians to go back in there and either play it better or not. And I mean, there's definitely good sound out of the tape. You know, the sound of recording to tape has a certain compression and a certain warmth that's desirable. But I don't think that's a huge part of what we're doing. I think it has much more to do with the approach of the musicians and just the approach of recording, the strategy of it.
Well, now the Dap Kings in your studio are at the point where people are taking their artists to your band and to your studio, most famously perhaps Amy Winehouse. You're on several tracks from her latest album, two of which are particularly popular. So I thought we'd hear one of them. And let me ask you to talk about playing behind You Know I'm No Good.
Well, I think that Homer was definitely a huge part of that. Homer Steinweiss, our drummer, I think his drums are right up front, and the sound of his drums and the feel that he has is very unique, and I don't think anybody else could do that. So I think that helped a lot. Dave Guy, the trumpet player, wrote the horn parts. You know, the band really, really sank into that arrangement, you know. And Mark Ronson, the producer, he was always really easy to work with, and Amy had all the songs done, so we basically charted out the chords and went in and kind of put the arrangement together and knocked it out.
Oh, so you just added it to the pre-existing. I bet they sounded a lot different when you were done.
No, we had a demo. We had a CD demo of mm-hmm. I think most of it was kind of her with a guitar strumming through chords and singing, and then we built the arrangement from that. So we recorded it from scratch, but, you know, she had the song written.
I see.
But we recorded. We put the arrangement together and recorded and stuff with Mark in the studio.
What I find interesting about this is that you're so into the sound, like that kind of 60s soul sound, but the mix of this is so different because the drums are so far up front. And
yeah,
it's a very
right.
contemporary kind of, you know, drum beats sound. So you've got this almost hip-hop
of
kind of sound up front and then the horns behind. Yeah.
Well, the way it worked, it's worked with the productions with a lot of the production we've done like that is they would come into our studio. Ronson would come into our studio. We would record the tracks, sometimes the horn, sometimes he would do the horn someplace else, and then he would take the tracks with him. You know, he would take the tape and he would dump it into a computer and do whatever he was going to do with them. The Winehouse thing is a, you know, I think it's a great record. She's a very talented singer and songwriter. Ronson's a great producer. But it's not really our thing. It was like they come in and we spend a couple afternoons, knock out some tracks for them, and they take them with and they do whatever they want with them. We have a very different relationship with that. It's not really like our record. Something on the side there, you know.
Let's hear it. This is Amy Winehouse with the Dap Kings playing behind her. And here it comes.
Me out like I was
That's Amy Winehouse, You Know I'm No Good, and behind her is the Dap Kings, and my guests are Gabe Roth, who's the leader of the band. He writes most of the band's songs. He's the bass player. And Sharon Jones, who's the lead singer of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. But we just heard the Dap Kings behind Amy Winehouse. And you not only recorded the horns for Amy Winehouse, you went on tour with her. Was that a really different experience than going on tour with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings?
Oh, yeah. it's a completely different show. Amy's, you know, to her credit, like I said, she's a great singer and she writes good songs. But basically, you go out there and you play down for 30 or 40 minutes. You kind of play down the songs, and she kind of sings them, and you're done. And you know, the band always comes off the stage with the same feeling, like, "Hey, man, when we get to play the gig?" Because with Sharon, man, this band is, I mean, sweating, and I mean, really, the guys sweat entirely through a suit every night. We go out there and we're stomping and playing, and guys are playing to the edge of their ability and the edge of their endurance until the end of the night. And it goes on sometimes an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, basically until Sharon's done with us. So it's a completely different thing.
So one more question before we have to end. I haven't had the pleasure of seeing you on stage, only of listening to the recording. So what do you look like, all of you, on stage? How do you dress? I mean, some of the solo reviews you're talking about, like, really loud clothes.
I don't think it's loud, but you could get you tell. Come on.
Well, no, we keep it sharp. Everybody's got suits and ties and shine shoes and locked in step, man. The horn section's got some unbelievable steps. The band is always stepping together and playing together, and Sharon always looks unbelievable. She comes out and is usually a blur from the beginning of the show to the end. You never seen something move so much. So visually it's definitely an event too.
I guess those injuries from your prison guard days aren't holding you back.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to both of you for talking with us. It's really been fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Sharon Jones and Gabriel Roth. Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings' latest CD is called 100 Days, 100 Nights. Next month, you can see Jones in the film The Great Debaters, directed by Denzel Washington. She plays a juke joint singer in the 1930s. Here she is on the soundtrack.
I'm a long, tall mama. They call me a chocolate brown. Give me two drinks of whiskey and you'll see me clown. That's what my baby like. That's what my baby like. Well, he's crazy about me and he do let me have my fun. I'm 5 feet standing, 6 feet laying down. I'm a pig meat and wolf from my head on down. That's what my baby like. Oh, that's what my baby like. Well, he's crazy about me and he do let me have my fun. Now listen here. Sometimes I think I will quit my man. Then again, I'm scared he'll raise some sin. I got what my baby likes. Yeah, I got what my baby likes. Ooh, well, he's crazy about me and he do let me have my fun. I don't care how bad the...
Coming up, Ken Tucker reviews Britney Spears' new CD. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. In recent years, Britney Spears has become a tabloid fixture for her marital and child custody problems. Her public behavior has overshadowed her music career. Rock critic Ken Tucker says while it's impossible not to think about Spears' current image and image problems, the music she makes on her new album Blackout, her first studio album since 2003, is well worth listening to.
10 p.m. to 4, and I came to hit the floor. Thought you knew before, but if you don't, then now you know. Yo, tonight I'm about to mash, make them other chicks so mad. I'm about to shake my ass, snatch that boy.
Mr. Fast.
All about me and you, doing how we do. Till the floor up, up, up. Tell them to make a roll, they wanna know. Tell them how to roll, all the way more look. We can give them a uncool. Make it up.
That song, Freak Show, arrives about midway through Britney Spears' new album. It addresses, with the help of five other credited writers, what she suspects, fears, and glories in what she's become to a large part of the audience that is interested in her. I'm going to hazard a guess here and say you probably aren't. So why am I reviewing Blackout? Because it is, against all odds, a good album. A good pop album for those of us who consume most of our music at home or in the car. And from the trade music publications I read, a good dance club album for those of you who go out at night and use music for fun and courtship. It tickles my ears to listen to the clever use of technology amassed to construct Britney's further disquisition on fame and its hazards, a song called Piece of Me. Listen to the Swedish production duo that calls itself Bloodshy and Avant. They produced Spears' terrific 2003 single, Toxic. Now, they contrast Britney's sly complaint with witty jingle jangles and an inexorable, irresistible beat.
I'm a American dream since I was 17. Don't matter if I step on the scene or sneak away to the Philippines. They still gon' put pictures of my derriere in the magazine. You want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? I'm this bad media karma, another day, another drama. Guess I can't see the harm in working and being a mom. And with a kid on my arm, I'm still an exception. And you want a piece of me? I'm Mrs. Lifestyle, the rich and famous.
You want a piece of me?
I'm Mrs. Oh my God, that Britney Shameless.
You want a piece of me?
I'm Mrs. Extra, extra, it's just in.
You want a piece of me?
I'm Mrs. She's too big, now she's too thin.
You want a piece of me?
Piece of Me offers sound effects pleasures mingling with Spears' mixed emotions. She says with some resentment, or is it pride, quote, I've been Miss American Dream since I was 17. She refers to her media overexposure with the phrase, my derriere in a magazine, derriere used to avoid an FCC fine and make the meter in the line scan properly. Who says she isn't mindful of craft, even if she isn't actually writing the song? Britney's voice is heard in two variations over the course of Blackout, a low, slurry growl, as on Piece of Me, and a high-pitched, electronically distorted squeal on a song such as Hot as Ice. To object to the fact that Hot as Ice, with its refrain, I'm as hot as ice, makes no sense, is like objecting to the fact that The Simpsons are cartoonish. For Britney, lyrics are either undisguised message blasts sent out to those she loves or hates, or mere syllables she uses to make pleasant noises. Hot as Ice is one of the latter. Her opening exclamations are as crucial to the catchiness as any of the instruments that surround her.
Sexy things, all you do is look at me. It's a disgrace. What's running through my mind is you up in my face. Yeah. Your voice is like music to me.
With its martial beat and baby, baby, baby chorus, that song, Ooh, Ooh, Baby, combines with the earlier song, Piece of Me, to suggest just how mechanical Spears feels, going through the motions of being a pop star. In Piece of Me, she refers to herself as Miss Bad Media Karma, a phrase that signals a soul denying self-reflection, a persona that's close to, as her album title puts it, blacking out. She makes interesting music about feeling trapped in a miserable period in her career, and perhaps, or is that certainly, in her life. As a portrait of an artist who feels played out, lacking in new life experiences that might inspire new subjects for her music, as well as new reasons to live, Blackout is thoroughly convincing. It has the very authenticity that Britney haters claim she lacks. It thus makes her impossible to dismiss.
Ken Tucker is editor-at-large for Entertainment Weekly. He reviewed Britney Spears' new album, Blackout. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Ian Chillog, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Patty Leswing, and Sam Brigger. Our program was directed today by Jonathan Menhivar. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble and the Barnes & Noble Review, the new online literary magazine with reviews, interviews, and recommendations. And from Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world, on the web at kauffman.org. CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrell's Loose at 1-877-21-FRESH. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, why one small neighborhood in Morocco has bred suicide bombers. Some were involved in the Madrid train bombings, some went to Iraq. We talk with New York Times journalist Andrea Elliott. She won a Pulitzer Prize this year for her series Any Mom in America. Join us for the next Fresh Air.